Attention all small biz owners. At the UPS store, you can count on us to handle your packages with care. With our certified packing experts, your packages are properly packed and protected. And with our pack and ship guarantee, when we pack it and ship it, we guarantee it. Because your items arrive safe or you'll be reimbursed. Visit the upsstore.com/guarantee for full details. Most locations are independently owned. Product services, pricing, and hours of operation may vary. See center for details. The UPS store. Be unstoppable. Come into your local store today.
Welcome back to part two of Next on the Tee. We're not done yet. Coming up, more stories, more insight, and more reasons to love this game. Let's dive right back in. Part two starts now, right here on Next on the Tee, where golf legends live and your game gets better.
Hello, folks, and thank you for coming back to part two of this week's show. I am so glad you pressed play and are back to join me. Two wonderful guests are going to complete this week's show, Kyle Malou and Richard Zokel. Kyle Malou, as I was mentioning in the first part of the show, he is the chief marketing officer for one of the fastest rising brands in our game, Sunday Swagger. You're really going to enjoy Kyle. I mean, this brand is so much fun. You're going to learn about the origin of the brand and their bold colors and bold designs and family orientation. So things that you guys can match as a husband and a wife, a boyfriend and a girlfriend. Kids involved, get everybody in the matching clothes and some partnerships that they've got going on, particularly with one of my favorite beers, Guinness. You'll hear about that and so much more when Kyle jumps on the show here in just a moment. And then right back from the previous episode, Richard Zokel is here again. We got into so many things with Richard, but we didn't really get into some of his favorite player stories. And some of these are really going to knock your socks off. I mean, when he was telling me prior to the show, he's like, hey, do you know who Jim King is? I'm like, well, I've heard the name. And then he starts telling me the story about Jim and his time with Jim and then how Jim becomes Lee Trevino's bodyguard. Amazing stuff. We get into a lot of other things, his relationship with Mo Norman, Clay Edwards coming on to really show and help him refine his game and really get it back on track to where it was, his conversation with Byron Nelson at the 93 Masters. So a lot to get in with Richard. So great are both of these guys. I think you're really going to enjoy this segment of the show. And again, as always, thank you so much for being here. Sit back, relax. Let us take your mind off everything else going on in your life for the next hour or so. Okay, but before we get into all of that, I want to start off by reminding you about our wonderful friends over at 2Under. 2Under men's performance briefs are the unofficial underwear of the PGA, Ryder Cup, and President's Cup teams, and are sold in over 3,000 golf pro shops and golf specialty retailers nationwide. Ricky Fowler is their global ambassador, and over 50 other PGA, Korn Ferry, and Champions Tour players wear them. Just to mention a few, they are David Toms, Jerry Kelly, Justin Thomas, William McGirt, Scott McCarron, and Chris DeMarco. The Joey Pouch technology provides the ultimate male asset management, delivering maximum comfort from the tee box to the boardroom to the bedroom. Go to 2under.com to check out the bundle specials that offer substantial discounts for being a Next on the Tee listener. That's the number 2UNDR.com. 2Under, performance in your pants. I also want to remind you about our wonderful friends over at Squares Golf. Before I bring them into the show, let's talk about our friends over at Squares Golf. And folks, do you sway and you're off balance in your golf swing? You know what? It could be your shoes. A golf shoe needs structure to provide stability and reduce sway. How can you tell if your shoes lack structure and are hurting your game? If you can hold your shoes by the toe and heel and twist it, toss it. Squares was designed for the perfect balance of structure and comfort. Isn't it time you tried Squares? Try the new Speedbolt at squares.com. That's squairz.com. And don't forget my friends back in the Berg. If you're from Pittsburgh or just love that blue-collar grit, Steel City's got you covered, literally. From vintage sports tees to iconic Berg designs, their gear is bold, local, and built to last. Check out their stores around Pittsburgh or head to shopsteelcity.com to rep the city in style. Steel City brand, built with blood, sweat, and steel.
Sure, this is golf, but so is this. And this is definitely golf. And so is this.
Hey, that's not golf.
Oh, wait, yeah, it is. And no matter what your golf is, you're gonna need a store. No, a superstore. A place to get fit for a new club and walk out with it the same day. A place to find the perfect fit. A place to do whatever this is. Because this is golf, and this is Golf's Superstore.
All right, now making his next On the Tee debut with me is Kyle Malou. Kyle is the chief marketing officer for one of the fastest rising brands in our game, Sunday Swagger. Prior to his current role, he was the senior director of e-commerce there. Before joining Sunday Swagger, Kyle was the director of client services for a company called Big Presence. And I couldn't be more honored. I get to have him with me tonight here on Next on the Tee. Hey, Kyle, thanks for coming on the show.
Hey, Chris. Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
So, Kyle, I want to start off our time learning about your time in the game. When did you first start playing golf?
You know, I started playing as a kid. My stepdad had a membership at a country club down in Cota de Casa in Orange County and put a club in my hand, even though I didn't want one in there. I just wanted to play baseball as a kid. He really got me into golf. And from there, it's been, you know, on a weekly basis, I've been playing not as much as I used to. I've got a couple kids and a growing family, but I've been pretty much golfing my whole life.
There's a lot of great golf out there in Santa Ana, California. Where do you enjoy playing?
There are. And actually, Santa Ana's great. I'm actually from Southern Orange County originally. So I always loved playing Cota de Casa and Dove Canyon and Tierras Creek and Arroyo Chabuco. There's just a lot of great courses down in Southern California. And from time to time, I'll make it out to the desert, playing La Quinta and Palm Springs. A lot of beautiful golf around.
No doubt. Do you have a favorite golf memory or experience that you enjoy reflecting back on?
Yeah, you know, I feel like a lot of them have kind of blended together. I haven't been lucky enough to have a, you know, hole in one or anything like that. But, you know, there have been some great golf tournaments I've been able to play in for charity that have been a lot of fun, or just kind of remembering, you know, I used to go out there and caddy for my dad when I was a kid. And it was every Sunday morning, he'd have a group of, you know, 20, 25 guys with a bunch of foursomes and just get to go out there with them early until I got old enough to join them and start playing as part of that group. And, you know, gamble, have some fun, hit a lot of terrible shots and just hope for a couple good ones in between.
Yeah. Let's talk about the brand Sunday Swagger. Take us back to the beginning. Where did the idea to create the brand come from?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I've been with Sunday Swagger for almost 2 years now. Our founder, Mark Carmona, started it in the end of 2021. And it really was bred out of, I mean, some boredom in COVID and the opportunity to play more golf, you know, and the fact that there wasn't really, or there weren't really many brands out there making loud, vibrant, fun golf apparel. So our founder was really into art at a young age. And when it came to fashion, he just liked to wear stuff that was loud and had a lot of color, made him feel good. It was kind of expressive. So with there not being many brands out there that were doing that, he saw kind of a sea of solids and stripes and golf shops and thought there was an opportunity. And there was some time because of COVID. To test out making product and working with manufacturers and getting into design. You know, something he had no background in at all. But it goes to show anybody can start something. And if you work hard enough at it and really believe in yourself for it, you can turn it into something.
So let's take that a step further, because you guys built a successful loyalty program in a very short period of time, 11,000 subscribers in just 3 months. How were you guys able to do that?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was brought in really to run e-commerce and marketing for the brand. And I've been in e-commerce for a little over a decade now at a various number of companies, selling everything from greens powders and bone broth to now golf apparel. What I've seen is the evolution of e-commerce and direct-to-consumer marketing over time is that people have started to get exhausted with points programs, unless you're one of the, you know, largest marquee brands out there. So instead, we migrated over and we focused on a smaller number of customers, but a more loyal group. and offered a paid membership program, not a lot, $20 a year annually, but focused on bringing them some really cool perks. Like if you were to pay $20 a year, but you'd get free shipping on every single order and 10% back and get a free hat, free custom hat when you sign up, and exclusive products that we weren't going to release to anybody else, that seemed pretty appealing to them.
So outside of Iron City Beer and Icy Light, I'm a Pittsburgh boy. My favorite beer is Guinness. And you guys have some very creative styles in conjunction with the Guinness brand. How did you do those styles and come together with a partnership with Guinness?
Yeah, absolutely. So another thing that I wanted to do when I got here was figure out how we could work with other brands larger than us to grow our size. And, you know, we'd worked with a handful of YouTube golf influencers in the past, and that had helped build reach and build some awareness for the brand. But to take it a step further, we were, you know, searching for some marquee brands to work with. When I got here, I saw that we had already worked with Fireball to come out with a collection. And there's always a lot of buzz and excitement about Fireball, and especially on the golf course. Guinness had actually seen that collection and expressed interest in working with us. Now, Guinness is owned by Diageo, and there's a lot of complexity in the contracts and what you can do and what you can't there. But I really wanted to make it work and make it happen. So we went through months and months of meeting the team and going back and forth, and finally decided, okay, we can come up with some cool stuff here, and we can blend their intellectual property with our own so that the collection we developed wasn't just going to be us slapping their logo on standard golf shirts. Let's instead come out with some custom characters and iconography and prints and use their colors in ways they hadn't been done before, and really bring people what Sunday Swagger has been known for, which is kind of going outside of the box and bringing out designs that other brands wouldn't necessarily have as much confidence in. So we like to lean into neons and loud colors and abstract patterns and prints. So we challenge Guinness to say, trust us and let us go outside of the norm. And I think you'll like it. And we dropped that collection a couple months ago, and they liked it so much that they picked it up and started selling it in their stores throughout the country. And now we're working on getting into their store in Dublin as well.
Wow, that's awesome. Kyle, just having gone past the 4th of July, you guys have some great designs that I love, featuring some 4th of July kind of spirity things, hot dogs. Sharks, right on time for the 50th anniversary of Jawzo, by the way, plus some cool patriotic patterns. Talk about what you have that we can look forward to showing off for the rest of this summer and next year on the 4th of July for our spirit around that too.
Yeah, absolutely. So, every year we love to come out with new concepts from our like Stars and Stripes collection. Our audience is a very patriotic one and really leans into, you know, July 4th, Memorial Day, Labor Day. You know, Ryder Cup's coming up too. So a lot of these prints in the collection will work, to really just celebrate the USA in general. So we have artists on staff that actually have drawn variations of the American flag, and we'll iterate on those, and we'll develop custom hats that are complementary, outerwear and t-shirts as well. So the whole collection is, it is pretty full. And then this year we decided to lean in a little bit further to what some in golf know as the glizzy, which is the hot dog, the best snack at the turn. So we developed some t-shirts, some hats. One of our artists drew a character, and we've been slapping it on a bunch of stuff. And it's been fun to watch the audience really pick it up. And we're seeing ourselves get tagged in all kinds of social media posts, you know, people wearing on the golf course all over the country.
Tell me about Let Freedom Swing. It might be my favorite one that you guys have.
That's a fun one. So we developed that for a t-shirt and for a hat as well. You know, it's a bald eagle perched on a golf club and an American flag behind it. Really just being enthusiastic about being patriotic and, you know, everything the USA is. Yeah. So we just, and we'll continue to iterate off that and do more and more with our USA collection and continue to drop more all the way through the end of September when, you know, the Ryder Cup hits.
So now Sunday Swagger isn't just for men. Your designs include women and kids. So if you're a family who wants to match together, Sunday Swagger has got to be your brand. Tell me about having something for everybody.
Yeah, it's something that I learned early on when I first got here. You know, I wanted to get an idea of what do people know about Sunday Swagger? What brings them to it? And what are we really known for? And what I found out was that when people are playing in golf tournaments for charity, if they're on vacation, they love to use Sunday Swagger for matching, loud, fun, vibrant, bold polos. Lots of neon pinks and greens and oranges and reds and yellows, and men, women, and kids alike. And since I've been here, it's only grown and grown. And, you know, we just had Father's Day, and the lead up to Father's Day is just, it's absolutely crazy to see how many youth polos are flying out the door and how some of the louder, crazier, more fun designs that maybe dads wouldn't wear on their own, they are wearing because their kids want to match with them. And even more than that, a lot of the men's and women's, you know, our his and her matching collections have become very, very popular. And what we're getting tagged in on social media, it's a lot of people on vacation. I saw one photo earlier today where there was a group of 15 guys at a baseball stadium in Omaha, at a college baseball stadium, all wearing the same bright orange neon with blue palm tree Sunday Swagger shirt. So people wear them. They're proud of them. They're, you know, they're loud. They're a lot of fun. And yeah, we've become known as the go-to for matching in golf.
There you go. I love that. And speaking of vacation, tell me about your shorts, because I'm headed to the beach later this week and your everywhere shorts are something that I wish I had in multiple colors. Talk about what sets those shorts apart from everybody else.
Yeah. So we went against the grain a little bit. When I got here, we were only doing polos and t-shirts and hats, and shorts were something that were really asked for, and they're tough to get right. You want to make sure that if you're going to do them, you really have to do them right. Our polos are in really an incredible fabric, and what people know about them is that they're a four-way stretch, they're moisture wicking material, they keep you cool, and overall we see people tell us that they're the best fitting, best feeling shirts in their closet. It's not uncommon for people to tell us they've got 20, 30, we've got some people with 50, 60 plus shirts in their closet.
Wow. They
just stop buying them. And we even released solid color polos, which we thought we'd never do, but did because people wanted to wear them to work and in the office. So in that same vein, when we approached doing shorts, we knew they had to be something that when you picked them up and put them on, you felt like you wanted to wear them anywhere, casual, golf, you know, warm evening out on vacation. So they've got that same built-in stretch. They've got a moisture wicking, breathable material. It's soft, it's comfortable, and we just keep developing more and more seasonal colors. And they are such that, you know, everyone around the office, we made them wear them for months before we even thought about releasing them. And they're the pair of shorts you didn't have to, you know, take off and change into something else when you got home from a long day. So you won't be disappointed if you give them a try.
And if you love some of those really cool summer designs, you can also get those patterns on your golf towel, right?
Absolutely. So we do matching towels, you know, waffle knit fabric. They're, again, a lot of fun, loud prints. We did some great Guinness ones as well. And we've even started leaning into now matching our shorts with the polos and the towels and everything. So it's fun to see what people like to mix and match and put together. You know, we're always keeping an eye on Instagram and TikTok, seeing how people are using our stuff. You know, we call it Swagger in the Wild, and it's a lot of fun internally when we get to not only design a product, market it, and advertise it, but really see, you know, how people are using it and the positive feedback we get from people telling us that, you know, our shirts, our apparel in general, makes them feel more confident, makes them just feel fun. They're icebreakers. We call them compliment catchers, because if you're in a Sunday Swagger shirt for an afternoon, there's no way you're not going to get at least a few people saying something good about it.
You guys set up to have two summer drops. Talk about what's in summer drop one and summer drop two.
Yeah. You know, we follow drop format where when summertime comes around, it's not uncommon that we're doing a drop every other week and sometimes every week. So we've actually already dropped two summer collections this year and they're available on the website. We have a tropical drop coming up at the end of this week, and we have a third summer drop that's going to be at the end of July. So we're always coming out with fresh new prints, whether they're Hawaiians and tropicals or dotted or, you know, fresh new colors, abstracts, you name it. If you want something different that you're not going to find from a standard brand that you see when you walk into a golf shop, you can take a look at our stuff if you're feeling adventurous. And you're pretty much guaranteed you're going to see something new on the site every single week.
Kyle, just a couple more before I let you go. As we look out ahead to the rest of summer and then into the fall and the winter, can you give us a glimpse under the tent for what you guys might have coming up?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of exciting stuff, and I can't necessarily say too much, so you have to keep an eye on it. But we're leaning more and more into partnerships and collaborations with some really iconic, fun brands. And brands that have nothing to do with golf, but we're bringing them into golf, and everywhere from food and snack brands to auto racing brands, and even potentially some military collaborations coming up. And those will all be here by, you know, October at the latest. So there's a lot of fun collabs coming out, and always more and more Sunday swagger, more hats, more polos, more t-shirts, and everything.
That's awesome. Kyle, for our listeners that want to stay up to date with all the great things that you guys are out there doing, want to follow you on your website, want to follow you on social media, how can they do it?
Absolutely. So come find us at sundayswagger.com. It's Sunday Swagger on Instagram and TikTok as well. We're pretty active and have a lot of fun with it.
Kyle, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to come and be a part of the show. I hope you'll come back soon, maybe a little bit later on in the fall. Talk to us about what's ahead for the holiday season and as we look ahead to 2026.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me, Chris. It's my pleasure.
Absolutely. Take care, Kyle. All the best to you and your family.
You as well. All right. Hey. Bye.
That's Kyle Malou, folks. And again, sundayswagger.com. You want to talk about something different? These patterns and these prints are unbelievable. You're really going to enjoy them. It's fun. That's one of the things I take away from what they've done. I mean, they've created some really fun designs and things that you're really going to enjoy. Those shorts, I'm telling you, I sure wish I had them in every different color because, as he talked about, you can go from wherever you are, whether he talked about they wear it in the office, but you get an opportunity to go play golf. You get an opportunity to go hang out with your buddies or your friends and that sort of thing. And then you go home. You don't need to change them. You can go to hang out down at the beach, which I'm going to do. I sure wish I had some of them there because you can go right from the beach to going out to lunch with your family in those shorts and not have to change things. And then, as I said, Guinness is one of my favorite brands. I mean, it's certainly in my top five beers, and they've got some cool collaborations with Guinness. So it's very exciting stuff. I encourage you to go out there and at least just check it out. sundayswagger.com. And then we'll catch up with Kyle maybe a little bit later on in the year, see what they're doing for, like I say, the fall and the holiday seasons as well. All right, now back with me is a guy who was a two-time winner out on the PGA Tour, was a member of the 1981 BYU National Championship team, also won the 1981 Canadian Amateur Championship, and is a four-time Hall of Fame inductee, and that is Richard Zokel. Richard joined me last week, and we got into talking about his upcoming book, Zokology, Winning With Your Mind, which is going to come out next Father's Day, so June of 2026. But there are stories in the book that we didn't get to. Player stories from his fantastic career that we just didn't have time to get to last week, and he is kind enough to come back and join me again this week. Hey, Richard, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, Chris. Good to be with you.
Same here. So, Richard, I want to start with the story you were sort of intimating to me about Jim King. He played out on the PGA Tour and the Champions Tour for years, was a paratrooper in the Army's 82nd Airborne during Vietnam, won the Florida Open a couple of times, but he was a rough-and-tumble guy. Talk about your run-in with him.
Well, let me put it in a little bit of context. You know, it's my rookie year on the PGA Tour, and I'm struggling. I don't feel I belong. I'm not playing well whatsoever. So I'd go to each Monday, and I wouldn't qualify And then we get to Doral, get to the west coast of Florida. And I've never been to Florida, being a West Coast guy. And go to Doral, and there's a lot of spots, and I'm playing poorly. Don't know how to play the grass. I feel like I don't belong, and it's getting worse with every passing week. After Doral, we drive up to Bay Hill is the next event, a Monday qualifying, and I missed Doral by a big number, shooting high scores. And so we get to Doral. Sorry, get to Bay Hill, and there's no spots available. And Dean Beeman decides to put six spots. We're qualifying at Greenleaf, tough golf course, and I don't make it there either. So, it's getting a little depressing, and I'm by myself on the road in these crappy motels, and I got to go back down to Fort Lauderdale which is the first year of the Honda Inverary Classic. It used to be the Jackie Gleason Inverary Classic on the Sunday night. And I'm going to play a practice round for the Monday qualifying on Sunday. So I get in there, and my caddy and I, we go check into the pro shop, and he says, yeah, you go ahead and play tee off the 10th hole. So we tee off 10. And going down, and we're on the 11th hole, and my caddy says to me, he says, holy man, he says, that there's this group behind us. He goes, that's Jim King. And I say, who the hell is Jim King? And he says, well, you don't want to have anything to do with this guy. And the rumors are, and they're only rumors, no one I don't think has ever substantiated. And he says, well, he's a South Florida leg breaker. I'm going, oh, that's great. Yeah, that's good. Stay clear of him. And there's lots of stories about this Jim King fellow, and I got to know him pretty good, and he was a nice guy after I got to know him, but he scared the hell out of me. And we're playing, I think the 12th hole at Inverary. It's a par five. There's this large mound that's blind on the left side, and a pond on the right side, and I'm putting on the green. I'm trying to play as quick as I can. I don't want this Jim King guy to catch me and play with me. So I'm putting on the green, and this ball lands in the water. Doosh. And I'm putting on, okay, Jim King's hitting his second shot, or, in the practice round. Doosh, another ball goes in the water. So I scurry like crazy. I'm picking up my pace. I'm walking off the green. And he's obviously walking faster than I am. And he comes around the corner and steps onto the front of the green. Well, I'm walking to the next tee. And he goes, hey! And I pretend I don't hear him, Chris. I put my head down. And he goes, hey, kid! So what am I going to do? I stop, I turn around, he goes, come here. And so I go, oh gosh, I'm scared. And I'm walking back onto the green. He's walking on to the green. And he says to me, he goes, give me my two balls. And I said, they went in the water. And he goes, you threw my balls in the water? And I don't know what to think. And this guy's a big guy, and he's rough looking, I'm scared shitless. And he says, I said, no, I finally muster up enough courage. I said, you hit them in the water. I was putting on the green. I heard them splash in the water. And then he goes, yeah, okay, kid, you're okay. So the stories about Jim King start to come out like crazy. And a few years later, I'm playing with Trevino up in Canada, and we get talking between the shots, and Jim King, the subject of Jim King comes up. So I tell my story, and Trevino tells me his story. And I think I told you that last few months before Christmas time, to substantiate this story, I gave Trevino a call. Michael Breed gave me his number, and I gave Trevino a call, and he goes, yeah, this is the story. Here's my story with Jim King. Trevino's telling me this. He goes, it's 1967. I just finished 45th on the money list. And Trevino's new, he hasn't hung around country clubs or anything. And he's obviously a remarkable player. And he's in the top 60. He's exempt player for 1968. And he says, I get to Doral. I'm staying in my hotel room. And Trevino goes, back in those days, I used to always carry a gun with me. I had a 38 revolver. It was in my bag on the golf course. And in the evening in the hotels, it was beside my nightstand by the telephone. I said, oh, really?
Wow.
And so Trevino said, you could travel with them, put them in your luggage and so forth on planes and so forth. So anyway, he says, I get this knock at the door. I open the door, and it's Jim King standing there. And Trevino says, he's got this big blockhead, and he's a scary looking guy. But Trevino, being a a real street smart guy. He knows whether he's in fear or not. And Jim King says to him, he says, "Hey, I hear you're a pretty good player." And Trevino invites him in. And Trevino says, tells me he's sitting on the edge of his bed. He's looking around. And Jim King sees this 38 on the nightstand by Trevino's bed. And Jim King says to Trevino, he goes, "Is that yours?" And Trevino goes, "Yeah, that's mine." And King says, "What do you need that for?" And he says, "Well, if I get into a jam with a guy like you, you know, I can have a better chance at that point." And then Trevino goes on. He says, "Yeah, Jim King became my bodyguard." And I went, "Oh my gosh." So he tells me this story. And then Trevino goes on. Here, the third story with Jim King in Trevino. He says, Trevino's buddy on tour was a guy by the name of Cesar Cernuto. Cesar Cernuto was a Monday morning rabbit like I was. And he tells the story that Cernuto was playing with Jim King in a Monday qualifying. And Jim King hits his ball out of bounds. He's out of bounds by about a foot or so. And Cernuto's got his scorecard. So they're looking for his ball. And they find his golf ball. And Cernuto says, "Yeah, it looks like it's out of bounds." And he kind of walks away. And then Jim King, he walks up to one of the OB stakes. And he gets down on his knees. And he looks for the other OB stake. And he calls Cernuto back. He goes, "Cernuto," he says, "get back here. So come down and look at it from this angle. It looks like the ball's touching the line." So Cernuto comes over and he bends down. And we all know if the ball's touching the line, then it's deemed to be in bounds. He could play the ball. Cernuto gets down on one knee right beside King, and he's trying to connect that one OB stake to the next OB stake. And Jim King hits him in the ribs with an elbow, and he goes rolling over and over and over. He really hurt him. Trevino told me he broke his ribs. And then Cernuto gets up, he goes, he gets up on his knees, he goes, "Yeah, I think the ball's touching the line too." So,
wow.
You know, there were a lot of stories about Jim King. And after that, after my incident with Jim King, he was a nice guy, but he scared the hell out of me. And I think his whole modus operandi, and there's a story that, you know, if you Google Jim King pro golfer, you're going to get a New York article pop up.
I saw
And there was this PGA Tour official named Pete Sesso. And this story ran through the locker rooms like crazy that Pete Sesso gave him a slow play penalty. And allegedly, Jim King grabbed him by the throat, picked him up, pulled him up off the ground. And he got suspended from that point on. But there was also another rumor that went through the locker room that there was a player named John Lister from New Zealand. John Lister was a good player back in the early 70s. And Jim King had allegedly stuffed him into a locker in the men's locker room. So I suggest you go get Larry Rinker or any of the Florida boys that played golf in the early 70s, particularly around the mini tour. And there's going to be a lot of Jim King stories. And he was extremely intimidating and scary. And you wanted to be his friend. You did not want to get on the wrong side of this fellow. That's for sure.
I bet not. And Larry's coming on the show in a few weeks. So I'll definitely have to ask him if he's got some of these kinds of stories as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Richard, let's go back 1984. As I was going through the table of contents again in your upcoming book, 1984, Mo Norman, Clay Edwards, and the Canadian Open. What's the story behind that?
Well, in 1984, I got my card in 1982. I had to go back to qualifying school, re-qualified. 1983 was the first year I became an exempt player, made the top 125. And I'm struggling. And we get to Bay Hill, and I'm hitting it just awful. And I'm on the driving range. It's the day before the tournament on Wednesday, and I'm at my wit's end. And in my book, I tell all these peaks and valleys and these moments when I'm not playing very well. And I look over in the gallery and I see Mo Norman, my buddy Mo Norman. And I'm going, maybe Mo can help me in this right here. So I walk away from my stall in the driving range, and I walk over to the ropes there, and I say, greet Mo. He's standing there with this guy I don't know. And I say, Mo, I need some help. I can't hit. I don't know what I'm doing, and I'm hitting it. You know, the tournament starts tomorrow, and I've got no clue. And Mo goes, oh, this guy will help you. This guy will help you. You know, Mo says things two or three times. This guy will help you. I don't know who he is. He's my age. And I'm going, what the heck can this guy know? He says, yeah, this guy, Clay Edwards. And this guy pipes up and says, I'll fix your problem. And I don't want to be rude to the guy. And I go, Mo, I really, really would like you to help me here. And he says, no, this guy will help you. This guy will help you. And Clay goes, I'll help you. He was under the rope. And I said, okay, come on over. I was very desperate. So I pull this guy, and he says his name is Clay Edwards. And I go, where are you from? He goes, I'm the head pro at Victoria Country Club in Victoria, Texas. And I said, oh, that's great. He's got this deep southern drawl, and I'm not, you know, my previous experience with golf instructors wasn't good. So we get to the spot on the range where I'm hitting balls. I'm hitting 3 iron. He says, hit a few shots for me. So I go through my motions, and I hit a few balls, and about 5 golf balls. So I say to him, says, okay, what do you think? And he says, on your next shot, I want you to compress the ball, stress the shaft. Sorry, he goes, no, I want you to stress the shaft at impact, compress the ball down the line as long as you can. That's all he says. So I said, okay. So with that image in mind, I'm stressing the shaft. I compress the ball down the line, and this ball just goes beautifully. Just wow. And this guy's not teaching me these, you know, any form of technique. And you know, everything he says, and I'm thinking to myself, wow, this guy's something, because I've never had an instructor ever react to me that way. And then I started thinking, if Mo is hanging around him, this guy's pretty good. So anyway, this was after the first round. The first round, I shoot 78. This situation happened after the first round. So on the next day, on the Friday, so I started working with Clay Edwards, and he was giving me a few of these tips. And he said, this is something you can take to the golf course. So I go out and I shoot 68 the next day. So I'm going, okay, there's something to this guy. And so Clay Edwards became my instructor. And then he goes, after he left on that Friday, after I shot 68, he goes, if you really want to learn how to play golf, I'll invite you to my home in Victoria, Texas. You spend 5 days with me, and I'll teach you how to play this game. And I was so intrigued by this guy, because he wasn't, you know, and I had gone and seen Ben Doyle, who teaches Bobby Clampett's golfing machine, and that just turned me away sideways. I was never going to go through that mess. And so anyway, a few weeks later, I went down to Victoria, Texas, and he'd get me out of bed at 4 o'clock in the morning and teaching me how to hit putts before I had any coffee in my system. He wanted me to wake up to putting as my senses came out of, you know, sleep and all this kind of stuff. So he really made a huge difference. And then at the Canadian Open in that year, in 1984, I really started to play some good golf just prior to the Canadian Open. I finished that week at the Canadian Open. Clay came up to visit with Mo, because Mo was always at the Canadian Open at Glen Abbey. And that week I got myself into contention. I finished 5th in the tournament, which was a huge deal for Canadians. And it was the previous week, I think I had a good tournament in Atlanta. So it was kind of the very first, that introduction, Mo introducing me to Clay, and Clay teaching me how to play some golf. It was really a moment where I was able to, you know, get to a point where I could start performing on the PGA Tour. So that was just another incident and then Clay Edwards, he was my only coach through my whole career. He was one of the best men at my wedding, and to this day, he's like a brother to me. And Mo gave me that. Mo introduced Clay Edwards to me. And then in 2000, there's a story where when Tiger played at the Canadian Open 2000, hit that remarkable shot on the 18th fairway over the water. Well, earlier that week, in one of the rounds, there was a rain delay and the guys were about to launch, and Mo Norman was about 20 feet from Tiger, and Mo's eyes are glued on Tiger, and Tiger's got his head down and grinding away in these putts, and he never, you know, looks up and looks around or makes eye contact with people. And Clay is sitting there watching me hit some putts, and he's going, oh my God, there's Tiger Woods right here, and there's Mo Norman's 20 feet away from him, and these two greats are going to pass in the night. if something doesn't, you know, but what, you know, what was Clay going to do? So then finally Clay yells out, Tiger Woods, meet Mo Norman, meet Tiger Woods. He yells it out at the top of his lungs. Tiger head popped up on a swivel and he's looking around, and then he makes eye contact with Mo. Mo comes walking over and they shake hands. And I got the snapshot of Clay Edwards and Mo Norman shaking hands with Tiger.
Wow.
And that photo is going to be in the book as well. So Clay Edwards was very meaningful to me. He taught a lot of plays. I introduced Clay to 84 PGA. I introduced him to Gary Player. Gary took some interest in my game, and when we played together, he was preparing for the senior tour, and we got paired together in Hartford. And I was playing well at this time, you know, he says, where'd you learn how to play? And I said, well, I've only learned how to play in the last 20 minutes, really. And it was this guy named Clay Edwards. And he says, I'd like to meet this fellow. Is he coming out? And I said, yeah, he's coming out to the PGA. He goes, well, I'm going to be playing in the PGA at Shoal Creek. And he says, I'd like to meet this young man. So we made arrangements, and Clay, yeah, I introduced him to Gary Player. I tell the story in the book. The week prior to the PGA, I'm in playing in the Utah State Open, and I win it, so I can't get there on Monday. And Clay had to sneak through the gates to get into, because I didn't get him a pass. And he met Gary Player on the driving range at 8 o'clock on Monday morning. And he goes up to Gary Player and he puts out his hand and says, I'm here to fix your game. And he shakes his hand, and Gary works with him for a few days. And I fly in, I finally get to Birmingham, Alabama, and Shoal Creek. And Clay goes, yeah, I had a great time with Gary. And Trevino wins the tournament and Gary Player finishes second. So there's a lot of great memories with Clay Edwards and Mo Norman, and you know, and Clay did a good job. He was the first coach, golf swing coach, to travel. He used to travel with Jim Nelford, myself, and he was a real fixture on the PGA Tour, that's for sure.
You also are going to tell the story about a practical joke played on Jack Nicklaus in the 1990 tournament at Cypress Point on the 16th hole. Give us a glimpse on that one.
Yeah. That story at 19, I had just qualified back to the PGA Tour. I think it was my fifth time that I got through the qualifying school and got back. And I was, Jim Nelford and I always played Cypress Point prior to the AT&T, you know, when it was called the Crosby. And so we get out there and I'm excited. I'm truly excited that I'm back on the tour, because I was a hair away from losing my job and not getting back onto the PGA Tour. So, but now I'm back, I'm in the tournament, I'm excited. Jim Nelford and I, we zip out to, it's about 7 o'clock, 7:30 in the morning. We get out to Cypress Point, and Jack and Howard Clark are coming in. Now, Howard Clark is from England. And I got to know Howard by playing in the Dunhill Cup. You know, I play for Canada, he played for England. We'd play at the old course at St. Andrews. And Howard, I guess he made arrangements to play with Jack a practice round at Cypress Point. And Howard had never played on a PGA Tour event up until this point. So we tee off. It's a foggy day, Chris. The fog's in. You can see, you know, your ball take off, and it's going to go about 50 yards before it disappears into the fog. But it was very special. It's like, because it was Cypress Point. So I'm in this giddy mood. We tee off, and Jim and I are playing with an amateur who's playing in the tournament, and he's an investment banker from New York. We introduce ourselves. We the three of us tee off in front of Nicklaus and Howard Clark, who are behind us. So we get to the 16th hole, and I'm thinking to myself, oh my God, this is Cypress Point. Yeah, I'm excited. I'm going to play a practical joke on Jack Nicklaus. So I say to Nelford and the guy and the amateur, I said, this is what we're going to do. The gallery that's following Jack and Howard Clark are not going to go up to the green because it's foggy. You can't even see the green. You're hitting it into a fog bank, into oblivion. You don't even know where you're going. And I'm going to stand on the green. And when there's a ball on the green, I'm going to put it in the hole and I'm going to run like hell down the 17th fairway. And this investment banker says, he goes, I don't like anything about this. I'm out. And Nelford starts laughing. He goes, okay, let's do this. So I'm on the green. And I said to Nelford, I said, go, there's a marshal over there standing by the tree. Go occupy him so he's not seeing what I'm up to standing on the green. So he does that. I'm standing on the green. I'm getting nervous, and there's no balls coming on the green at all. And I want it to, you know, this to happen quickly. So finally, a ball lands on the green. It's a Spalding Tour edition. So I know it's Howard Clark, because Jack is a McGregor guy at this stage, and Howard is a Spalding guy. I put Howard's ball in the hole, and I run like hell down the 17th fairway. So we're going, oh my God, now what are we going to do? This is kind of sacred ground here at Cypress Point. I think there was only like 5 hole-in-ones on the 16th hole at Cypress in the history. It said, well, so what we do, I grab a scorecard from my amateur. He had a scorecard. I wrote on the scorecard. I said, Howard, welcome to the PGA. I go, nice one, not, and then signed the crazy Canuck. So we finish up on 18, and Howard comes up, and I got to make sure that, you know, we didn't do any damage to history with Cypress Point. So Howard comes up, he goes, I didn't make a hole in one on 16, did I? I said, no, you didn't. We put it in the hole. And Jack comes up and goes, oh, what are we going to do about our $50 bet we had on that hole? And I said, oh goodness, I'll let you guys figure it out. And I buggered off. And then Jack came up to me the next day, he said that he speaks to the media every year at the Golf Writers Association at Pebble Beach. And he told the story, and I was so delighted, Chris, that Jack accepted this practical joke that I did on him. And so I was able to get through that without any kind of repercussions from Mr. Nicklaus.
A few years later, 1993, Byron Nelson at the Masters. What's that story?
Yeah, well, that was that's an interesting story. I got to know Byron Nelson a couple of years prior at this oilman's event up in Banff, where all the tycoons of the oil industry in Canada and the United States gather on an annual basis. And Byron Nelson is the host pro. And they also bring in another PGA Tour to come in. You know, they bring in Fuzzy Zeller, Hubert Green, and then one year they asked me to do it. So I was there for a few days, and my wife and I, Joni, we got to know Byron and Peggy very well. And Byron is just the nicest guy in the world. And this was around 1989 or something like that. And then in 1992, at the start in the book, I tell about how I did a complete full-blown reconstruction of my golf swing, changing from being right-side dominant to left-side dominant. And I immediately picked up on this. It gave me some stability in my golf swing. So in the Masters, and I because I won in the Greater Milwaukee Open in 1992, get invited to the Masters, and then in the Masters in 1993, I wasn't playing well. I missed the cut. I was 3 over par, standing on the 12th hole in my second round, and it's cold and wet, and I make a triple bogey on the 12th hole when I was on the cut line. So I come back the next day. I had to finish the last couple of holes on Saturday because of the rain delay. And I missed the cut, and my dauber's down a little bit, and I take my shoes off, and I come into the grill, and there's Byron sitting by himself. So I sit down, and he greets me very nicely. And we're having a nice little discussion about golf, and I told him about my incident on the 12th hole, and he told me how to play it and how to read the moss when the wind. He said, whatever you do, don't look at the flag on 11, and don't look at the flag on 12. Look at the wind, how it's coming down the 13th hole. So then I muscle up enough courage to tell Byron about my discovery in learning how to swing, become a left lead hand dominant swinger. And then he goes on to tell me the story about him and Ken Venturi, how Venturi would go to Byron and then go to Hogan and be looking for their validation to his progress as an aspiring player. And, you know, and he said Venturi would come to me and I'd tell him this, and he'd go away and work on, come back, and he'd perfect it, and he'd always do a good job. And then finally, at the end of the story, Byron tells me that he just says to Ken Venturi, he said, you know what, everything I'm suggesting you do it very well. He says, but one thing I want you to do is, instead of being right side dominant, you need to be left side dominant. And so those who can remember how Ken Venturi swung the golf club. And he would often do it in his telecast for CBS on these tips by Ken Venturi. He'd be so right side dominant. It was very blatant. And I went, yeah, no, I understand that. So when Byron gave me this validation that what I was doing was right, it just meant so much to me. And I felt, you know, that to get that validation from someone as like Byron Nelson, it was so meaningful. And then, you know, when I won the tournament or the previous year, he sent me a note, and that handwritten note on a card that was personalized with his name on it. So those things are, you cherish those, you know, particularly in the career that I had, I cherish those moments very, very dearly.
Richard, a couple more before I let you go. And speaking of cherishing and things that you have or collected or learned over the years, what are a couple of things that you really cherish, whether it's a memory, something like you just mentioned with Byron Nelson, or things that you might have in a golf den or something like that, that you really look at those things and they mean a whole lot to you?
Yeah, I think every you know, winning, I went over to Morocco as an amateur and won a sacred or a Digger that they, you know, when the senior guys go over to Morocco and play, and the winner, like Stephen Ames, you win these Daggers that are Moroccan Daggers. So every trophy, it's not so much the trophy of the win, but what it represents to me is overcoming failure. As an earlier player, learning to be, you know, like I never felt I belonged until I did belong. But you have to overcome those barriers. And quite often, if we don't control our thoughts properly, as I talk about every time with you, Chris, you know, you can go down these rabbit holes and get lost. And it's a mental health issue. And being mentally fit is very important. So I look at all my accomplishes and trophies that I've had, and there's a few of them, but they're really evidence of how I was able to overcome, you know, fear of failure, fear of success, having a hyperactive mind that got me into an anxious state, and then, you know, by the time you're at the better, you know, on the, you know, the 15th on the back nine of your life, you understand a little better that the way we think is really the key to everything.
Richard, one thing that you just mentioned, and I've talked to several of your peers who have said something very similar, the feeling like I don't belong. Mm-hmm. I've always scratched my head on that, because for you, when I look back at your career, I mean, you won the Canadian Amateur Championship. You won mm-hmm. a national championship at BYU. You were such a great player. You went through Q school multiple times. I don't understand. Help me understand, I should mm-hmm. say, how you could feel like you don't belong when you earned your way there. It's not like you just, you know, you Monday qualified and the next thing you know, you're out on the PGA Tour and you're a kid from out of nowhere. I mean, you earned your way onto that tour and you earned your way to stay out on that tour multiple times. Talk about the feeling like you don't belong when, for a guy like me, looking at all the things that you accomplished, it was mm-hmm. clear that you did.
Well, yeah, and that's a good point. And those are good questions, because I remember when before each one of these are steps, and you know, I can still I still can remember that when I decided that I was going to be a professional, how it was going to work is the moment I became a professional, that I wouldn't have any of these problems. Well, life doesn't work that way. So yes, I walked onto the Brigham Young University team, made the team, we won the NCAA, I won the Canadian Amateur, but then the next step is you got to go to the qualifying school, the PGA Tour qualifying school. And I happened to make it right on the nose. And then now I'm thrust on the PGA Tour, and quite frankly, just because you're a good college player or win the Canadian Amateur doesn't mean you're going to be a good professional golfer. And with every step, you got to climb this this ladder, and people wash out at every level. They you know, they don't get past junior golf or amateur golf, or they don't collegiate golf or professional golf, and all these. I mean, look at how many young professionals that are around this world right now that are aspiring to be professional golfers. There's thousands of them, and they hit it 10 miles and they got beautiful golf swings, but the majority of them are not going to make it. 99% of them are not going to make it. And the reason why they're not going to make it is because of the thoughts that run through their mind in those moments of pressure. And that's the thing that you have to learn. So what I was able to do, like you in those moments at times when you don't think you belong, and then something happens, you got to just kind of move on to the next thing. If you dwell on those things, you're doomed. You're not going to get past that. But if you're able to start the next day and have it start from a clean slate and then learn from your mistakes, then you're going to be able to make progress. And you do not have to be you can be a tortoise in the hair in this race, as long as you continue to make progress. And I recall being able to do this all the way up to winning on the PGA Tour. I struggled at every level, but that's the best way to learn. And then once you accomplish it and you're able to look back and go, wow, that is pretty good. That's better than perhaps I thought I was going to do. But you can look back and go, those are wonderful accomplishments. And I'm very proud of the career that I had, even though I've only won, two PGA Tour events, one of those unofficial. I wish I had continued the effort to do that to major championship. I didn't do that. And that's where I stalled out, and that's where I crapped out a few years after. And then, learning how to come back and get back as a 42-year-old player who got through the Korn Ferry Tour by finishing in the top 50, and I finished 13th on the money list, earned my way back. And then that's when life started to get figured out and go, okay, I understand this. I got this. And but at that point, my body started to give way a little bit after 21 years on the PGA Tour. But that's what life's about. That's what we do.
So let me take that last piece again a little bit further. You talk about not winning a major. Wish you had done that. Mm-hmm. You talked a little bit earlier about something that's a huge deal for Canadians. I mean, you won two major championships in your home country, 81 Canadian Amateur, 2001 Canadian PGA. Trying to win championships like those comes with what I would imagine, Richard, is a lot of internal and external pressure. Mm-hmm. People have expectations of you as a Canadian player to win your national championship, to win a major on Canadian soil. You, mm-hmm. I'm sure, had your own level of expectations of yourself.
Yes.
To want to win one of those. Talk about dealing with both those internal and external pressures, overcoming them and winning those tournaments.
Absolutely. Like I can recall, playing in amateur golf tournaments shooting in junior golf tournaments, shooting in the 90s, and then years later advancing. And then I can stand here and that Canadian Amateur Championship that I won right after college, it was at the Calgary Golf and Country Club. And I opened up with 64, 68, and I increased my lead. I got a 4-shot lead going into the final round. And I shoot 68 in the final round, and I got to make a 5-foot putt to get into a sudden death playoff with Blaine McAllister. So Blaine's from Texas. He's a good friend. He's up from Texas in Calgary. And I'm sitting here kind of going, okay, now I'm in a sudden death playoff. So I have enough experience at collegiate, 4 years of BYU, and we won the NCAA. And I'm standing here, we're going into a playoff, and this is how I built my belief system up at that specific point in amateur golf, that I am not going to let this guy beat me. It's in my country. It's the Canadian Amateur. I'm the Canadian, and I'm not going to allow him to win. This is mine. I deserve this. So I had this belief system that he is not going to win. I am going to take it. I'm not going to, and I often use this term, I'm not going to knock on the door. I'm not going to pound on the door. I'm going to kick the door down. And there's a few moments in my life. That was one of them. The other one was is in 1992 when I won the Greater Milwaukee Open, and how my mindset was in that. And that's where I get really deep into the book about my mind and how I took charge. And it's only happened to me on a few occasions. And every time it's happened to me, I went on to win that golf tournament. And I recall that tee shot on the first sudden death hole, Blaine hit a poor shot. I hit a great shot, hit the green in two putted for birdie, and won the tournament. So there's moments when you learn at these at every level at that you're all of a sudden your belief in yourself becomes supercharged and you take control. And I wish I had more of that. I wish I had a psychological mentor who could teach me that. And I bumped into it on a few occasions. And if I knew the old saying, if I only knew now what I knew then, I'd been able to perhaps win a few more. I think everybody who plays professional golf feels like they've left a lot on the table. Tiger, I think he feels like he left a lot on the table. I feel like I've left a lot on the table. And but you know, that's just how things go. And I feel very fortunate to be able to have figured it out before I left the PGA Tour.
Richard, before I let you go, remind our listeners again about your upcoming book. We got a year to wait, but let's stoke those fires because okay. It just seems like it's going to be fantastic.
Well, it's going to be different. It's a bit of an autobiography. Like I put, you know, the five qualifying school that I went through, I name every single player that was in that tournament. And I go back and I tell my story about, the water moccasins on the golf course and the tough peat dye golf courses that we played and how difficult they were. And the book is called Zocology, Winning with Your Mind. How Disco Dick learned to compete and win on the PGA Tour by changing the way he thought. So I'm submitting my book to the publisher next week. And we're going to go through the whole process that they do in publishing a book, validating all the facts in the book and all that. And we're launching it in 2026 on Father's Day, which is going to be the Sunday of the US Open next year. I hope people get inspired by it and people, those who are aspiring to be professional golfers can learn from it, because if you get your mind right, you're going to be very effective in this world.
Indeed. I cannot wait for this book to come out. Remind our listeners again too, Richard, how they can follow you on social media.
Yeah. On X at Richard Zocal is the only social media piece that I'm currently on, and we'll have to expand that when the book comes out next year, won't we, Chris?
Indeed. Richard, you're awesome, my friend. I can't thank you enough for coming back for a second week in a row and sharing more stories. I feel like, even though I've had the privilege now of having you on the show 9 times, like I'm just barely scratching the surface of the great stories that are locked up inside you. I hope I get this privilege with you again soon.
I look forward to what we do, Chris.
Me too. Take care, Richard. All the best to you and your family. We'll catch up soon.
Thank you.
See you, Richard.
Bye-bye.
That is the great Richard Zocal, folks. I mean, how great is that guy? I mean, how great are the stories and the way that he tells them and the way he draws you in and the enthusiasm in his voice and all the things that he got to be a part of over the course of his PGA Tour career and coming up through the mini tours and the things that he did, Monday qualifying and all of those things. This book is just going to be fantastic. I cannot wait to get my hands on it. Again, you need to follow him too, at Richard Zocal. Z-O-K-O-L is the spelling of his last name. And you're really going to enjoy him. And I can't, like I say, you're going to enjoy this book. I know I am. I can't wait for it to come out. And hopefully we'll try to tap into it a little bit more. Maybe this fall we can get Richard back on here and hear some more of the stories from his time out there on the PGA Tour. All right, my friends, it is time for me to put a bow on this edition of Next on the Tee. My sincere thanks again to Tom Patry, John Kennedy, Kyle Malu, and Richard Zocal for joining me this week. Scheduled to join me next week are former PGA Tour pro John Foate will be back, as will the confidence doctor. Dr. Bob Winters will make his regular monthly visit with us. And just in time for summer, Morni Botha from John Doe Eyewear will join me to help us protect our eyes from the heat and the sun this summer. So it's going to be a great time, folks. Hope you'll come back and be a part of it with us. Like I say every week, I want to send out my thanks to the great folks over at the Pittsburgh Tribune Review for hosting this show on their site. For coverage about everything going on in Western Pennsylvania, including your favorite sports, go to triblive.com. And you're going to find this show by clicking on the sports section tab. And the most recent episode is going to be front and center for you there, right there on the homepage of the sports section. Or you can click on sports and then podcast network. You'll see the Next on the Tee logo. Click on that. And many of the most recent episodes are going to be available for you right there as well. You can also find the show over on Good Pods, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Player.fm, GolfNewsNet.com. Pretty much anywhere you get your podcast content, we're on that site. And my sincere thanks as well to the great folks over at Good Pods for making this show one of their recommended podcasts. So please download their free app and stream your favorite podcast right there on your favorite device. But like I say each and every week, my sincere thanks go out to each and every one of you for being the greatest supporters in the history of podcasts. I appreciate you all so very much. Until next week, hit them straight, my friends.
Thanks for joining Chris again this week on Next on the Tee. We hope you enjoyed the conversations as much as we did. Please share the show with your golf buddies and be sure to follow it on Trib Live or your favorite podcast app so you never miss an episode. Thanks for pressing play and being part of the journey. We'll see you next week, right here, where the best minds in golf share their stories.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. Shopify.com/audioboom.